Important.
Keep up with developments in this explosive election year with a subscription to Town Hall Magazine. Log on to townhallmagazine.com, townhallmagazine.com.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling hair loss with guest expert Dr. Mary Len, of the USF College of Medicine in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education on those 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And once again, as I mentioned, with me today is Dr. Mary Len. Mary, it's great to have you here.
Thank you, Steve.
Mary also participates with Focus on Females at our annual symposium, providing the skin cancer seminar, which she's done beautifully for the last several symposium. In fact, it was due to Mary's lecture on skin cancer and specifically melanoma that led to saving the life of one of our attendees. This was, I think, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
And she participates each year, the attendee, Norma, participates with us each year, sharing with the audience about how her attending Mary's skin cancer seminar gave her the motivation to go ahead and get that what appeared to be a mole biopsied and with the ultimately the diagnosis of a melanoma.
Yes, and I feel very grateful that she is so outspoken in continuing her support of the Focus on Females lecture series.
And this really is an opportunity to encourage each and every one of you that are listening to the radio show to take advantage of that annual symposium where you can attend and see firsthand and listen firsthand and discuss with the experts on a vast number of topics, over 20 different topics in medicine and health, and able to see slides and really visualize and create a synergy in that seminar room with the hundreds of other women that are there in that particular seminar and talking about how to identify a breakthrough for your medical problem. So just like Norma, in her case, we were fortunate enough to give them information, be there at the right time, at the right place, to give the information, ultimately save her life. Again, we're there for each and every one of you. So Mary Len grew up in Southern California and attended the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where she received her Bachelor of Science degree. She then received her Doctor of Medicine degree from Duke University School of Medicine and performed her internship at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Len completed her dermatology residency at the University of Michigan Medical Center and, in addition, completed a specialized melanoma fellowship at the University of Michigan Multidisciplinary Melanoma Center. Dr. Len moved to Florida in 1996 and currently is an assistant professor and director of medical student education in the Department of Dermatology and Cutaneous Surgery at the University of South Florida. In addition, she is the chief of dermatology at the James A. Haley Veterans Hospital and is on the faculty in the Division of Cutaneous Oncology at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center. Dr. Len has multiple publications as well as numerous lectures and presentations at academic dermatologic meetings throughout Florida. And Dr. Len specializes in treating cutaneous neoplasms, hair disorders, and addressing women's dermatologic disorders. And again, so it's very nice to have you here.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, our topic today is hair loss. And the medical terminology for that is alopecia.
That's correct.
And we discuss, I guess you think about, those of you that specialize in this topic, think about alopecia or hair loss in two broad categories. Could you give everyone an overview?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Steve. Usually, most people think of hair loss as the male pattern type or female pattern type of hair loss. And that is the most common type, and that tends to be non-scarring. So when we refer to a type of hair loss as being non-scarring, that gives us hope because that means that we can regrow hair in those areas where the hair has already been shed. The other type, luckily, which is less common, is the scarring type. And this, unfortunately, once it happens, there is no hope of any hair growth occurring in those areas that are already affected. So when we diagnose someone with scarring type of hair loss, that really pushes up our armamentarium and acting much more aggressively than we would with non-scarring hair loss.
And is the reason for this the lack of, optimism in the scarring hair loss because of the loss of the hair follicle?
That's correct. This hair follicle is completely destroyed, whether it be by antibodies attacking it. There's a lot of inflammatory cells. And once the hair follicle is completely destroyed, Steve, there's no hope of regaining the hair follicle, no hope of regenerating the hair follicle. Mm-hmm. And by the time patients come to see us, sometimes they've been misdiagnosed. And they've been misdiagnosed with non-scarring type when they, in fact, have scarring type. And so we have to be much more aggressive.
And so they're wondering how come they have not been able to see any hair regrowth.
Yes, absolutely.
And ultimately, they may have been misdiagnosed.
Exactly. Correct.
So would you give our listeners some examples of the scarring hair loss, or in what setting would one expect to see a scarring hair loss?
Sure. Luckily, again, these conditions are not as common, but I feel that it's worthwhile to tell the general public that because they may be misdiagnosed. Mm-hmm. So people who have a history of lupus,
okay,
who have a history of lichen planus, okay, can develop a scarring type of hair loss. And this can be devastating because they can masquerade as a patchy type of non-scarring hair loss, and they may elude their primary care physician's diagnosis, and they may be treated with inappropriate, less effective medications.
Mm-hmm.
Other types of scarring hair loss occurs from if you have a very severe type of fungal infection on the scalp, and if you have a lot of, for example, abscesses or pus drainage, that can cause a scarring type of hair loss. And so people tend to downplay infections of the scalp. Mm. They may think that, the flaking's from dandruff, when in fact it's a raging fungal infection that could be easily remedied with the appropriate antifungal medications.
Okay. And
I wanted to make sure that we did include another type that's strictly from chemical processing of hair. And we see this type, Steve, mostly in the African-American population.
Mm-hmm.
This is called CCCA, which stands for Central Centrifugal Cicatricial Alopecia. And we are seeing a rise of this in recent years. This used to be called hot comb alopecia, which was a misnomer because a lot of the women nowadays don't use any apparatus similar to a hot comb. And what we did find in that was a common denominator in a lot of these females is that they do chemically process their hair. They do relax their hair very frequently. And they process their up to every once a month, once every 3 weeks. And while it's understandable that for cosmetic reasons they want to have straighter hair, their natural curly hair is unruly. It's very hard to manage on a daily basis. They are, in fact, setting themselves up for traumatic alopecia, traumatically induced, hair loss, and that is scarring. And consequently, I'll be honest with you, I treat these women on a daily basis in my clinic, and I have very long, detailed discussions with them to change their hair care practices. And it is very hard because for most women, their hair, especially in certain cultures, it's their crowning glory.
So. This is a category of relaxers. The relaxer is essentially a toxic or is toxic to that follicle and creates damage to the follicle, which then the body heals and through the healing process causes scarring and loss, permanent loss of the follicle.
Correct. But for some reason in these patients, it's exaggerated response. I mean, other people can in other cultures can use relaxers, so we can't say it's 100% from the chemical.
I see. Are there any known relaxers that can be used that are less severe that that the African American population can use without being as concerned about scarring hair loss?
And that's a great question, Steve, to bring up because I want to make the public aware that there is a misnomer. There's a misconception that the products that contain that say no lye are supposedly less toxic, and that is, in fact, untrue. In fact, they may be more toxic than the ones containing lye. Mm-hmm. So I want to make the public aware that all of the relaxers can be toxic.
Okay. Now, how about, women use a lot of agents on their hair, right?
That's correct.
And some, as you pointed out, the relaxers are, in all types of relaxers, are a problem, or can be a problem. How about non-relaxers, other chemicals that women use in their hair? Is there an association with scarring hair loss in some other products that are not relaxers?
Mm-hmm. There haven't really been as strong of a correlation with the other products as with relaxers. Later on, I can talk about some protective hair products that women can use as well, especially in the African-American population. In fact, one of them, it's the generic name is dimethicone.
Okay.
And the brand name is BioSilk serum and also Frizz Ease by John Frieda, which is very, very common.
Okay.
And I have had success with women switching to these hair care products.
And how would these products be used? Purely in a protective fashion?
Yes, it's to restore the hair barrier. It's to reestablish the cuticular layer of the hair because we've seen in hair specimens that have been treated with multiple rounds of relaxers that the cuticle layer, which is the protective shaft coating, is ruffled and it just allows increased hair fragility.
Okay, so for those women that have used relaxers before, as a general approach, you recommend stopping the relaxers.
Yes.
And then to restore the health of the hair, use one of these two products, the BioSilk serum and the Frizz Ease.
Frizz Ease.
Mm-hmm. Frizz Ease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one more question I have before moving to the non-scarring alopecia or hair loss. And by the way, let me just intercept or make a comment at this point. For all listeners, please call in with your questions. We encourage you to call in with your questions about this topic. And our phone number is 289-1860, 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it's 877. That's toll-free, 877-969-8600, especially for those of you that are streaming online. That's toll-free, 877-969-8600. So, in the setting of scarring hair loss, like lupus and so forth, I imagine that these patients with a history of lupus can also do get the non-scarring hair loss as well. Or is all their hair loss in patients with lupus purely a scarring phenomenon?
there's a fine distinction. The people with systemic lupus erythematosus can get a non-scarring type of hair loss due just to the inflammation, autoantibodies. Mm-hmm. Those who develop the discoid lupus, and that's usually a subset higher, mostly seen in African-American populations, they get a very characteristic type of hair loss where they have a brown, darker, peripherally rimmed patch. And in the center is a lighter patch of scarred skin. And I should qualify my statements because the two products that we use to protect the hair shaft are not enough to restore hair, so we have to actually give systemic agents by mouth to decrease the inflammation, like prednisone. Mm-hmm. People with lupus may consider being on Plaquenil to increase that. People with lichen planus can be given antibiotics to reduce inflammation as well. So,
can a patient with lupus scarring hair loss in the setting of lupus also get a female pattern hair loss as
absolutely,
well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Female pattern hair loss is rampant, and there's another type of hair loss that's distinct from female pattern hair loss that we've recognized. It's called senescent alopecia with more of the elderly population.
Well, let's talk about the non-scarring hair loss now. Let's talk about, as you pointed out, senescent. As we get older, we lose hair. Why is that?
Well, as we age, the hormone fluctuations make a big difference. The female hormones wane, and even if the male hormones stay the same, it's the relationship, the ratio of the two that distinguishes that. So a lot of women around menopause will experience hair loss. Female pattern hair loss will have those kind of patients who experience female pattern hair loss in their early 20s, for example. It's not due to the fact that their female hormones are waning. It's the fact that they may be overproducing the male hormones. Mm-hmm. And so as a screening test, we always do a full endocrine screen for the female and male hormones. And we also check for basic conditions like a thyroid panel. People with thyroid disease often go undetected. And to me, that's a shame because other than their non-specific symptoms such as tiredness, crankiness, constipation, etc., they may have this alopecia that can be easily treated. So we always run that.
Which will make you feel better if it's corrected.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then we run a regular metabolic panel. We want to check, their electrolytes, make sure that everything's okay. And we also check iron. Now, Steve, anemia is also a very common cause.
Anemia, okay.
And it's undetected. So we check that. We check iron levels. We check ferritin, total iron binding capacity. All of those help clue us in targeting the exact cause of their alopecias. And you're right, many women come to us with multiple etiologies of alopecia, and it's up to us to act as detectives to figure out which is the main cause and what we can do to eradicate it.
Mm. Are there other elements, for example, zinc important with hair maintenance and growth, magnesium, copper, some of the other trace minerals?
Along that note, I would recommend biotin as the single most useful supplement. Mm-hmm. And I regularly prescribe biotin 5 milligrams to all my patients, whether it be from drug-induced, whether it be scarring type, whether it be non-scarring type, because that is, it's not anything that will be stored in your system if you overdo it, and whatever you don't use is excreted. So,
how does biotin help the hair?
Nobody knows exactly how it works, but they do know that in studies that people who take over 300 micrograms of biotin have had a sustained hair regrowth. And up to 5 milligrams has been shown to be very safe. So I recommend the maximum.
And is biotin available over the counter?
Yes, they can buy. It doesn't have to be the fancy GNC type. You can just go to your regular Walgreens and CVS and buy the regular biotin 5 milligrams and just take the recommended dosage.
Okay. All right. And once again, our number for questions from our audience today is 289-1860. That's 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. And tell me about, so we talked a little bit about as we get older, even in the 20s, hair loss can begin in the woman, and you frequently see an imbalance in the hormones, the male-female hormones?
Mm-hmm.
And just to be clear, it's the male hormone, the testosterone, which is produced in the women, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which will promote the hair loss, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so do you frequently check for hormone levels in the woman when they come to you for hair loss?
Yes, we check for something called DHEAS. We find that the ratio of FSH and LH not to be as indicative as DHEAS. It's a little bit more specific. And women also will tend to have other signs of androgen excess production. They'll have increased hair growth. For example, on their lips, you know, around the chin area, the cheeks, they may have irregular menstrual cycles. So that can clue us into a bigger picture of endocrine abnormality going on.
Well, this is a very good point. And I want, just to, again, to be clear, it's because you can have what seems to be confusing increased hair growth in one part of your on your head and then the loss of hair growth on the top of your head. Mm-hmm. And the testosterone does that. The male hormone does that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you're looking for a pattern of hair loss. So loss of hair on the scalp with increased hair on the chin and above the lip perhaps may suggest an excess in male hormone.
Right. And that condition is called polycystic ovarian syndrome, otherwise known as Stein-Lieventhal. And in that constellation of symptoms, they will have hirsutism along with, like you mentioned.
Hirsutism means excess
hair
body
growth,
hair.
As well as hair loss. Now, not everybody in their 20s who experiences hair loss will have that syndrome, but it's a very easy marker to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
I've certainly been gratified in diagnosing it in some of the patients who walked off the street with that.
And they also have reduced periods or no periods, amenorrhea.
They may be
correct?
Amenorrhea, yeah, to the menstrual irregularity. So you'd mm-hmm. be doing someone a big service by diagnosing that early on. Mm-hmm. And they may have raging acne. So mm-hmm. that's also due from the increased androgen production mm-hmm. In addition to the testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Women who don't have the polycystic ovarian syndrome, who just have regular pattern hair loss, may have a very prominent family history of hair loss. Now, in the past, we used to always blame it on our parents. So what else is new, right? Mm-hmm. It's a guilt trip. But they used to blame it on the maternal side. And they used to say, well, if the maternal grandfather had hair loss, then most likely, then, you know, the descendants would. But now we found, Steve, that it is polygenic on both the paternal and maternal side.
Okay.
And so that's important to know.
Okay. And I want to also clear up one other thing. You mentioned that you'll check the DHEA.
DHEAS,
okay, for levels. And that, is that indicative of the male hormone?
Yes,
levels?
That's indicative of the... It's one of the derivatives of the male hormone.
Will you also check the estrogen levels as well?
Estrogen, not so much, but okay. Follicular stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. I think the ratio of those two can be indicative in some cases.
So you'll get both the DHEAS and the FSH. LH.
I may get the FSH and LH mm-hmm. if indicated, but I will almost certainly always get the DHEAS.
Okay, and there are clear levels at which point, if the result exceeds that for the DHEAS, then that turns you right on to
absolutely.
The fact it's excessive.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do in that case? Let's say there is a patient with excess DHEAS levels indicative of elevated androgen levels.
Mm-hmm.
Do you refer them to the gynecologist? Would these people wind up getting treated with estrogen therapy?
Absolutely. I would refer and defer the treatment to endocrinology.
Okay.
So.
Okay, let's say a woman just had a baby. And why do women lose so much hair after having a child?
Mm-hmm. Typically, the average person loses 100 hairs a day. They shed 100 hairs a day. And I want to also impart the knowledge that, contrary to popular belief, shaving the head does not increase hair growth.
Okay.
Some people have operated on that misconception, mm-hmm. so I wanted to make sure that I did a public
you can't
service.
Stimulate. thank you very much. These are some of the things we hope to accomplish today. So, and other people will say massaging the scalp will also encourage the follicles to increase activity. That's also false.
Along that lines, I hate to be the terminator and to debunk these popular myths. I know, I hate to do that, but I think as a public service, I'm bound to try to
clarify.
Yes,
unmuddy the waters.
But I do think that people who massage the scalp. There's something to be said by increasing the vascular supply. Mm-hmm. Can I discount that 100%, Steve? I can. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's going to help, but mm-hmm. is it enough? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And shaving the head, and a lot of women will shave their heads or shave their child's head in the hopes of increasing hair growth, and it will not happen.
Okay,
it will not occur.
Does that work? Okay.
So getting back to the hair, why do women shed hair? Well, it's because they have, during pregnancy, your female hormones are so high.
Mm-hmm.
And when you withdraw that postpartum, when you deliver, it drops precipitously.
Okay.
And that mirrors, for example, you know, as you age, senescent alopecia, you withdraw it, but this is a much more precipitous drop. So 6 to 12 months out, you're going to start shedding the hair, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And women find this very commonly occur right after they deliver the baby. And interestingly enough, the child will also mirror that, because as a child, as the maternal hormones receive from the child, you will get a mirrored shedding from the child, from the infant. And a lot of this I is just strict hand-holding. I mm-hmm. have to reassure the patient that, yes, her hair will regrow, but it does take up to 12 to 18 months to regrow.
And that's important. Right
it
there.
Is very important to know, because a lot of women feel it's going to grow within 3 months, and I don't want them to lose hope. I do recommend that they continue to take multivitamins.
Mm-hmm.
We've so far targeted biotin as being important, but who knows? I mean, you know, zinc, magnesium, all of that is important, selenium. So I want them to take multivitamins. I want them to increase their biotin intake,
mm-hmm.
and I want them to also not lose hope that it will regrow. In the other hand, they may also be developing a female pattern hair loss on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to distinguish that is to do hair biopsies. And I find it's very important for me to mention that on the show, because a lot of times you cannot distinguish those two based on clinical observation. You need to do a biopsy. And it's very important so that they can detect inflammatory cells surrounding the hair.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back for more. Ann from Seminole, you're on the line. And after we come back from break, we'll go right to you. Be right back. We're tackling hair loss today with Dr. Mary Lynn from USF. This is Dr. Steve Maskin. Be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation, or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light, or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. Think of everything that's happening right now, from the effort to repeal Obamacare, the Tea Party movement, and the all-important elections in November. I keep up on all this and more at hotair.com. Every day, hotair.com shines a light on everything from the Democrats' plans to raise our taxes to choosing a new Supreme Court justice. And hotair.com is free. Log on to hotair.com and read what you've been missing. Hotair.com. From Obamacare to the November elections to choosing a new Supreme Court justice, keep up with it all by logging on to hotair.com. That's hotair.com.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. My guest expert today is Dr. Mary Lynn, a dermatologist from USF College of Medicine. And on the line is Ann. Ann is from Seminole, and we welcome you, Ann, to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question. I have a problem, and I hope there's a solution out there.
Okay.
I have, I'm 39, for 12 years now, I've had excessive hair shedding. It grows back, you know, maybe 3 to 4 inches, and then falls out. And it's not in one particular spot. It's all over. And I have tried everything, even the things I'm not supposed to try, like Propecia, Rogaine. I'm actually trying progesterone cream now, trying to self-diagnose. I've gone to the doctors. And because it's not, you know, my hair still looks good to them, they're not really thinking it's a problem. Thyroid was checked. The only time my hair never fell out was, of course, during my pregnancies of my children. And then about 6 months after I stopped nursing, it all started falling out again. And it's to me, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any solutions out there that I might not be finding or my doctors might not be thinking of?
You're 39. Do you have regular periods?
Yes.
And you've been checked to make sure you're not anemic?
Yes, absolutely. Everything, according to my doctors, and I don't know if I'm getting the best care possible, everything comes back fine, blood work, everything. But, I mean, it's excessive shedding. It's everywhere, always, and my hair is thinning now. It doesn't look good.
And do you have any systemic diseases such as lupus?
3 years ago, they thought that it could be lupus because I said, I have to find a solution to this. There's got to be a problem. And it came back as positive for systemic sclerosis,
okay.
Even though there's absolutely, which baffled all my doctors. I went to a specialist after that, of course, a rheumatologist, and she said, you have absolutely no symptoms other than a positive test. So she retested me, and the blood work came back positive. And she said that hair loss has nothing to do with that, and until symptoms show up, to not even worry about it.
So you've had two positive tests for the progressive systemic sclerosis at this
Correct.
Point. Okay. And have you yourself noticed any the skin tightening over
Nothing.
Extremity?
Okay. Nothing.
All right. Mary, what do you think?
Well, Ann, you've mentioned you've had these recurrent cycles. How many years have you had this going on?
Excessive hair shedding.
Yeah.
Since I would say started about when I was 25, but I have curly hair and it would sit past my shoulders, you know, in ringlets.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't start noticing that was narrowing until my late 20s.
Okay.
And then once I hit 30, it got worse. But then I was pregnant twice in my 30s, and, oh, it was just gorgeous hair never falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm just going to be permanently pregnant until I die, or there's got to be a solution.
Well, that could be one solution. I don't think I'm going to be a proponent for that. But
neither will my husband.
but also tell me, when you noticed your hair regrowing, did it return to its normal
Yes.
state? Okay.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's thick and healthy, and then it just falls out.
Okay. Now, let me tell you something. There are many causes. This sounds like telogen effluvium. This is where you have hair shedding all over your scalp. Now, typically, one cause that we discuss is postpartum, after your pregnancy. You can also get this from people who are on crash diets. Are you on any diets?
Never. No, I'm thin.
Okay.
I never
so you have no yo-yo dieting, anything
never.
Like that? Okay. Other causes could be from stress.
No,
are you
stress.
Under...
Only stress,
well, stress
my
from
hair
your
shedding.
Hair loss. Right, exactly. And when you have a shedding, is it clogging up the tub? I mean, how much hair are we talking about that shed? Is it littered over your bedroom, your pillows?
Yes, Yes, and if I wear a white shirt, it's constant. So I don't even wear a white shirt.
Okay. It sounds like you have telogen effluvium. You say you have blood tests. I mean, I guess we'd have to make sure, you know, that you had all the appropriate ones. But certainly people with connective tissue disease have been known to have hair shedding. And are you on any medications?
Nothing.
Right now? Okay.
You say connective tissue disease, you mean For example,
scleroderma, lupus, and you do have positive tests. So, and even though it hasn't shown the classic symptoms of scleroderma, like what Dr. Maskin was referring to, you know, your tightening of your skin. Some people can have tapering fingers, you know, stiffness of your facial muscles. You you may have an early early sign by the hair loss that you're manifesting right now. I would suggest that you get maybe a biopsy of your scalp to find out what's going on, because I think that's very useful. You can, from the biopsy, the pathologist can count how many follicles are in a certain stage of the hair cycle, and then from there on they can make the diagnosis.
Would there be a cure for that?
Telogen effluvium, there is no cure, but there are methods that we can talk about. There are certain products that we can, you know, give you that may help stimulate the hair. A lot of the times it's just waiting it out. But in your case, I find it fascinating because you've had recurrent bouts of this hair shedding, and you have had normal hair growth. So that shows, that implies that you do have the capacity to regrow your hair.
Oh, it's very thick. And the first 3 inches, it's thick and beautiful. And then it starts tapering off. And it's been consistent for, say, 15 years now. It's never slowed down except for the pregnancies.
Now, you said that you've also tried Propecia, which I think is a little extreme
crazy
in your case,
yeah,
at your age. But how long were you on Propecia?
I think I did it for 6 months, and there was nothing I've ever tried has shown any results.
How about Rogaine? How long were you on Rogaine?
Maybe a year.
Okay, and you had
none?
And then
my problem, well, the Rogaine is for, you know, for regrowth, and that I realized I don't have a problem with regrowth, so I stopped doing it because it grows right back, and it grows full, and then it decides to die. And it's not breaking. It's all coming out from the roots.
So you're saying that while you are on Rogaine, your hair is still shedding?
Oh, yeah. It never stopped. I've been on progesterone cream now for about 5 months now, thinking, okay, that's the answer. And that was in the beginning, I kind of think I wanted to see that there was a result. I don't really think there is.
Well, I mean, you're saying you have a normal head of hair now?
The first few inches, but it dies out, and then it falls out. So it's very... very thin. It looks like there's just hardly any left.
So it looks like fine downy fuzz hair, right?
I have, thank goodness I was blessed with curls, so I have some body to it.
Yeah.
But
it's short. It's shorter.
It can't grow more than 3 or 4 inches. It's just maddening. And if I knew there was no possible solution that this was it, I'd be okay with it because I'm still very healthy and attractive, I guess. But if there's a solution, my gosh, I want to find it.
It sounds like you have a component of androgenetic alopecia along with your telogen. So with that kind of hair loss, your hair is not ever going to grow to its normal long length. You're going to have the fine, fuzzy down hair. And if you did respond to Rogaine, I think that's also likely that you have two things going on. I wouldn't worry so much about the length, Anne. I mean, I think the fact that you're covering your scalp with your hair, you know, of course it's your hair. You're used to having longer hair. I empathize with you. But I think cosmetically speaking, you don't have any...
No.
Obvious patches of baldness. Is that
nothing?
Correct?
No, none. Thank goodness, none.
And I've got a question for you. You mentioned that you're not experiencing any tightness of skin over your extremities, your knuckles, and your hands, for example. Do your fingertips or your nail beds get blue or purple sometimes?
Oh, I have Raynaud's phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So she has. Okay. It sounds like perhaps early Kress syndrome. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you have any areas of calcification in your skin that
nothing.
You notice? Maybe on an earlobe?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Anne, you really need to also see a rheumatologist to follow you for this, because this can progress to the rest of your organs. And I know your hair is the most cosmetically noticeable, but to prevent this can be a potentially serious disease. So I would recommend that you get under the care of a rheumatologist, and then dermatologists can also follow you for your alopecia, your hair loss.
I absolutely will follow up with my rheumatologist.
You have an existing rheumatologist now?
Yes, oh, yes, good. And she said that there's nothing wrong and just thank you so much.
Well, before you go, I got one other question of Mary that you may be interested in listening. So if there is a component of hair loss from possible connective tissue disease, if there's a biopsy done, can a biopsy definitively rule that in or out, that it's a systemic disease affecting her hair?
Yes. Yes, it can actually see changes consistent with early lupus or other types. Yes, especially lupus, because you would see increased mucin.
And if that's the case, then if the biopsy came back suggesting that there is a component of autoimmune hair dysfunction, if I can use that term, is there a therapy that Anne might be able to use to help her?
Yes, people have been treated with Plaquenil for lupus, and if you address the underlying cause of it, then you may secondarily address the alopecia. So I think it's very important that their primary condition be evaluated.
Doctor, do you have a clinic that I could go to?
Yes, I'm at the University of South Florida Clinic. You can make an appointment anytime. The number you can call is 974-4270. I'm not used to calling my own clinic, you can tell. You can call to make an appointment, and I'm there. I'm also, we have two offices, one in South Tampa on 17 Davis Island, in addition to the main clinic, which is at Bruce B. Downs Boulevard. And you're from Seminole, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, either one would be fine.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sure.
Thanks very much, Anne. Have a good day. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Again, call in now with your questions at 289-1860 or toll-free 877-969-8600. Be right back.
Watching the news, surfing the web, and listening to the radio, it's become apparent. Our country and our leaders are in desperate need of prayer. Thousands of believers right here in Tampa Bay are coming together at a special concert of prayer and worship on the National Day of Prayer this Thursday night at Bright House Field in Clearwater. Join us for this free National Day of Prayer event this Thursday night, 7 o'clock at Bright House Field in Clearwater. We'll see you there.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. Think of everything that's happening right now, from the effort to repeal Obamacare, the Tea Party movement, and the all-important elections in November. I keep up on all this and more at HotAir.com. Every day, HotAir.com shines a light on everything from the Democrats' plans to raise our taxes to choosing a new Supreme Court justice. And HotAir.com is free. Log on to HotAir.com and read what you've been missing. HotAir.com. From Obamacare to the November elections to choosing a new Supreme Court justice, keep up with it all by logging on to HotAir.com. That's HotAir.com.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find
find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin, and with me today is Dr. Mary Len, dermatologist from the University of South Florida College of Medicine. And we are talking today about hair loss, alopecia. And let me ask a question. This may be going to the myth department. Is it true that eyebrow hair, if you lose a follicle in the eyebrow, it doesn't, you can't regrow it, so to speak, or it's very hard, it's hard to regrow eyebrow hair?
That's a very, very pertinent question, Steve. I'm glad you asked that. Most people feel that eyebrow hair it cannot be restored, but in my experience, you can restore eyebrow hair. Okay. We've had people with eyebrow hair loss from a condition called alopecia areata. Alopecia areata usually occurs in younger patients. We have seen pediatric cases of it, and the patients present with coin-shaped, round, circular patches of hair loss, a baldness. And if it becomes extensive enough, it becomes alopecia totalis, where they lose the entire scalp hair. And then if they start losing body hair, it's called alopecia universalis. And so I tend to be very aggressive with these patients in terms of giving them immunosuppressants, because what happens in that condition is the antibodies attack the own hair follicle. And once they start losing eyebrow hair, we can give them oral immunosuppressants like prednisone, for example, Imuran, and or cyclosporine, and then they do regrow the hair. But I should mention, though, that a lot of people walk around with hair loss in the lateral third of their, just the tail ends of their eyebrows. And that is a very, they used to call that the Queen Anne sign. And that is indicative of thyroid disease.
Okay. That's interesting.
So if they have low thyroid, hypothyroidism, they will may have, in addition to their functional symptoms of being tired, they will have hair loss in their eyebrows.
Can infections also cause loss of the outer third? And I'm thinking of Hansen's.
Absolutely. Leprosy, syphilis. Syphilis in particular will cause a what we call a moth-eaten hair loss. So the hair looks like it's chewed up, it's gnawed down, and they will have patchy hair loss. And that can mimic alopecia areata. Now, granted, we don't see as much syphilis now as we used to, but sometimes in certain cases, I will run an RPR, and it never hurts.
This is a blood test for
blood test to detect syphilis, yes.
Okay. All right, good. And what vitamins can one take to help with hair loss? You mentioned biotin. Are there other minerals, vitamins that one can take?
Certainly, there's always been many anecdotal reports. Are there any FDA-proven or any strictly correlated ones? No. But I do recommend that patients take a multivitamin, because however we may be deluded into thinking that we have all the nutrients we need from what we ingest in this day and age, it's just better to be on the safe side. And I recommend a biotin supplement.
Your multivitamin, is there one in particular you like?
I like, you know, the brands Nature Made is good.
Nature Made.
Nature Made is good. I recommend that because it's very accessible to a lot of my patients. If you go to GNC, they have a lot of specialized vitamins as well. Very good.
And tell me about the hair loss in the setting of the patient with cancer, the patient that takes chemotherapeutic agents. Should one expect to always lose their hair when going on chemotherapy, or is it specific to the chemotherapeutic agent one is taking? And then if one does lose hair, what should they expect to happen after they stop their or finish their course of chemotherapy?
Well, chemotherapy in general, the premise behind it is to stop replication of cancer cells. And so when it stops the DNA synthesis and the replication of cancer cells, of course, it will also affect the normal bystander cells. And unfortunately, that includes the stem cells in the hair bulge, the hair follicle. And in that instance, with chemotherapy-induced hair loss, that's called anagen effluvium. Anagen is the first phase of the hair growth, and that's when your hair cells are actively replicating. And so by, and since it's the most activity of replication, the chemotherapeutic agent will stop that. And then the hair will just fall off, usually all in tandem, all at once. And it could be very traumatic to the patient. But I do reassure the patients that with anagen effluvium, secondary to chemotherapy, it is restorable. It can be recovered.
So they should expect the hair to return.
They should,
after
pretty much, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just jumping around a little bit here, you mentioned about the relaxers and the effect on hair loss. And I don't think, but I want to clarify, can perms and coloring treatments cause hair to fall out?
Yes. Any chemical that causes traumatic injury, by chemical injury to the scalp. Now, perms are very can be very toxic because they actually have to break the disulfide bonds in the hair and regenerate so that you can have curly hair now. And by causing trauma to the hair shaft, that's going to cause hair breakage, and then you can get secondary hair loss from there. Same with coloring treatments. Mm-hmm. With all my patients with hair loss, the first thing I do is sit down with them, tell them one-on-one that they need to really reduce the amount of chemical processing.
So that could be pertinent for Anne, who called earlier. She
mentioned
she had curly hair, but
absolutely,
if she's using perms or coloring treatments, that would only aggravate any other reason why she's having
yes,
issues.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so Anne, if you're still listening, then you may want to consider that. And can drugs make hair fall out?
Certainly. Coumadin is a
wow,
big one. And a lot of people in the community are on Coumadin.
Mm-hmm.
Certain antibiotics can cause that. Anti-seizure medications, antidepressants can all cause hair loss. And I also mentioned antibiotics. So any drug, if you look in the PDR, it can potentially cause skin rash or hair loss.
Wow. So they're clearly, and this is, I guess, an important point, that there are different layers of components that all add, or either an additive or a synergistic effect on the hair growth,
mm-hmm.
and you have
yes.
to basically tease it apart to really impact this on this hair loss.
Yes, and we run a battery of not only blood tests, but I think the tissue specimen biopsy is very, very important and is very key. And I really urge patients to get a second opinion because mm-hmm. just if someone just diagnoses it without taking a tissue specimen, it could be the difference between getting hair restoration or not, because mm-hmm. you may be misdiagnosed as having non-scarring hair loss when you really have scarring.
And the biopsy can be done in the office.
The biopsy is done in the office, correct.
Right. All right, we're on a last minute. Is there any other final comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think that, in general, the public needs to be aware that, one, there are different types of hair loss. Number two, they shouldn't be satisfied with just being told without any real workup that they have one certain type. I think that they should be proactive in asking about getting all the tests available so that nothing is missed. And I really want to impart that to the public.
Well, thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me.
I enjoyed it. Next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic will be non-ophthalmic manifestations of Sjogren's syndrome. So Sjogren's syndrome causes dry eye, but also is a systemic disease causing a variety of systemic illnesses. We'll be talking about that. The following Sunday, we'll be talking about grieving over a loss. And the Sunday after that, on benign prostatic hypertrophy. So those are the next three shows. This is Dr. Steve Maskin, thanking you for joining us this Sunday and wishing each and every one of you a healthy week. And we'll see you next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.